This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mokhtar. In studio today with me are Wong Xiaoning and Philip Si. First, we're going to recap how global markets closed yesterday.
It was a green day, right? In the US, up Dow 1.1%, S&P 500 up 0.2%, NASDAQ also in positive territory, 0.4%. I think a lot of recovery after that Monday slash and burn. Also across at Asia, also a nice shade of green across, with the exception for Japan, where it was closed for Marine Day. It's also closed today for Sports Day.
I love them. They've got so many
popular holidays. I know, I love it, right? We should have many days of sports and marine here as well. Shanghai also was up 0.3%, Hang Seng up 1.8%, STI 1.3% in the positive territory, and back home in Malaysia, the KSCI was up 0.7%.
All right, all green there. And for some insight into what's moving markets, we have on the line Carlos Casanova, senior economist at UBP in Hong Kong. Good morning, Carlos. Last night, let's take a look at the U.S. Last night, U.S. weekly unemployment numbers were 420,000. That was higher than the consensus expectations of 350,000. But many businesses are complaining of labor shortages. So what do you think the numbers are telling us?
Good morning. Well, we have seen a recovery in the U.S. economy, and that is why this whole conversation about tapering is warranted. Of course, Jerome Powell remains very dovish, and he has highlighted the fact that the recovery on the employment front is not homogeneous across all sectors, meaning there are going to be significant labor shortages in certain white-collar jobs, office jobs, whereas the areas of the economy where you have perhaps a higher incidence of poverty, and of course that sort of intertwines with the racial conversation in the U.S., are not doing as well. So that is the main reason why the Fed still has some voices within it that are a little bit more dovish. Now, the latest figures show where we're above expectations, so it does complicate Jerome Powell position a little bit more. If we see further strength in the labor market, even though there, you know, is some asymmetry in that recovery, that will make it very difficult for the Fed to continue to maintain its current stance. So we do expect that they will signal how they plan to taper their QE program at the Jackson Hole Economic Symposium in August. So that will be the main thing for investors to keep an eye on in terms of the Fed. But of course, if there's a stronger recovery in the labor market, then that would imply that that tapering effort needs to be brought forward.
So one contradiction was that also weekly jobless claims went up to a two-month high. Is it an aberration or something really to watch out for?
It's possibly related to the fact that a lot of the support schemes that were put in place in the COVID, and remember, there's been tons of research and commentary on the fact that many households actually ended up earning more after the support measures were put in place and when they were working. So that explains a bit the sort of rebound in consumption in the U.S. These measures all will start to fickle and phase out at the end of July and into August. So a lot of the, unless they announce an extension of these packages, we will see more people seeking to get back into the labor market in the coming weeks.
Okay, Carlos, let's bring the conversation back to Asia, because China recently cut 50 basis points in its reserve requirement ratio. What are they trying to do in terms of balancing yields and stimulating growth?
Mm-hmm. We definitely, it was a mixed message. We definitely expected that they would have to do something, because the pace of policy tightening between March and May this year was excessive, and it was starting to derail the recovery in consumption, which of course is the whole point of the 14th five-year plan and that domestic pivot. We weren't expecting it to be as aggressive as a universal reserve requirement ratio cut. So they lowered it by half a percentage point, and that unleashed 1 trillion yuan in liquidity, which is approximately equivalent to 1% of GDP. So it's not a small amount. And while it's not enough to spur animal spirits, so we don't see it sort of being a big enough change in stance to warrant upside, a lot of upside on equities. It is enough that they will put a floor on the recent PE compression. I think that is what they were going for. The markets were very negative, and that correction in equities actually was not helping on the consumption front either, because through wealth effects, it was impacting consumer sentiment and forcing households to postpone their decision to consume. So it does sort of provide a floor there. It's mostly preemptive, as they have been looking at consumption, and it's been a little bit disappointing. It means that the pace of policy tightening going forwards will be slower. But for the time being, unless there are negative developments in the Chinese economy, we don't expect that they will implement an additional reserve requirement ratio cut this year. And they will prefer to do more through liquidity injections instead.
Okay, then, looking to one of our neighbors, in light of the weakening economy and the rupiah losing ground against the US dollar, does Bank of Indonesia's decision to hold rates yesterday make a lot of sense to you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was in line with our view. I mean, ideally, if they had some policy space, the bank should deliver support given the situation with the domestic economy. Inflation is subdued in Indonesia. It's not one of the markets where we are seeing inflationary pressures at 1.33%. So really, they're only the main reason why they didn't deliver support is because they've seen a lot of depreciation on the currency front, as you've rightly mentioned. Rupiah is one of the IDR is one of the worst performers in Asia this year. It's down 3% against the US dollar. And so most likely they had to balance that picture. They had to balance sort of the need to continue to provide stimulus, so maintaining the policy stance with further depreciation and outflows, especially as the Fed starts to talk about tapering, which would mean downside pressure on the rupiah, and that would also mean higher imports and weaker consumption. So the choice was then to keep rates on hold as expected, even though the economy is under pressure, and so there was also a consequent downside revision to GDP growth this year as a result.
And just building on Shaza's point about Indonesia's weakening rupiah, in your view, which ASEAN currencies in this region are likely to weaken against the greenback in the near term?
Mm-hmm. Well, in the near term, this whole conversation about Jackson Hole and tapering is going to imply some degree of downside risks for Asian currencies. The other thing that's happening, I think, which is a little bit disruptive in the medium term, is that the Treasury continues to inject liquidity. So they have an additional $350 billion to inject on top of the $1 trillion that they've injected already to date. And that will put pressure on Treasury yields and sort of short-term U.S. dollar appreciation through the end of July. But as we head into August and September, and as investors get better visibility of what happens with, a Fed that's draining aggressively at the front end of the yield, and a Treasury that is no longer injecting as much liquidity, I think at that point is when we are going to see some downside risks for Asian currencies. And we have, current account surpluses in most cases, but India, Indonesia in particular have deficits. You have a lot of foreign holdings of domestic assets in Indonesia and Thailand as well, where we are seeing an increase in Delta variants. So we do expect that those markets, India, Indonesia, and Thailand, potentially will be more at risk, but it will be broad-based throughout Asia. Of course, looking beyond this period, as we head into the end of this year and even into 2022, our view on the U.S. dollar is still quite bearish because of the twin deficit in the U.S., so that should be supportive. But in the short term, we have the conversation around the Fed, you have the Treasury, and that is going to be supportive of U.S. dollar strength in the next couple of weeks.
All right, Carlos, thank you so much. That was Carlos Casanova, senior economist at UBP, weighing in on the outlook for the greenback. He sees long-term bearish, but short-term still pretty strong.
Yeah, I think it's a flight to quality at the moment, right? Because Asia, rising cases. And also, if you look specifically at a few countries, so you're talking about Indonesia and India, current account deficits, Thailand also with the rising cases, a bit of a weak spot in terms of the economy.
Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.